Have you ever wondered, and I know you have, about whether you needed an add-on lens for your iPhone? It's a topic that comes up all the time at the iPhone photo team. Scott Bourne has the skinny on some new lenses, and Scott is with us today. I'm Jefferson Graham. You're listening to the iPhone Photo Show, and we're going to talk about lenses and maybe a little time-lapse and a little battery gate and hot phones and who knows what else. But let's start off by saying hi to Scott.
Hi, Jefferson. How you doing?
Good. Tell us about these new lenses. I know you're pretty excited about them.
I am. Moment is a company that pretty much pioneered, if not maybe take away the pretty much. I think they did pioneer the idea of add-on lenses for smartphones, at least serious ones. And they're located up here in the Seattle area where I live. And so I have been very attuned to what they're doing. It's a bunch of hipster young kids who all are much more cool than I am, but they do some really great stuff. And their last set of lenses, the version 2 lenses, was built when the iPhone 7 was king of the road. A lot's happened since then. And frankly, if you've been trying to use Moment lenses, or hardly any other lens for that matter, on iPhone 13 or 14, you've probably been disappointed. But that's going to change because they've got new stuff that's tuned just to the new phones, and I got all the info.
Okay, well, let's go through the negatives first. If you wanted to use a Moment lens, you needed a special Moment adapter. You needed a special case. It was complex. And secondly, once Apple gave us the 77 millimeter lens, there was really no reason to get a telephoto lens from a Moment or anybody else because it wasn't going to really add much. So here we go. What do you say?
Well, I agree with that to a point, if depending on which phones you're talking about. But you do still need a special case or an adapter. The adapter for, if you already have a Moment case, the adapter is $5. So I think they're pretty cool in how they figured that out. And you do have to screw it on. It's a bayonet mount. It's sort of like a Micro Four Thirds lens. It's a quarter turn. It's pretty fast to get them on and off, but it is a hassle to carry anything extra when you're on the iPhone. And for several years, I was in the agreement zone with you on the, hey, it comes with the three lenses, pretty much 24-70 that we all would carry back when we had DSLRs. You can cover that focal range with an iPhone. You're good to go. You're not going to get really great telephoto stuff, but you know, for most people that aren't bird photographers like me, it was fine. But now, we have this new 48 megapixel sensor. Now, technically, it's not 48 megapixels, but it acts like it. And it demands more resolution. Lenses, I'll get slightly technical here, resolve for what's called the horizontal line pairs. I'll just put it like that. In a lens, the amount of data the lens can resolve for is important if you have a big sensor because it starts to look soft. The image starts to look soft if you have a big sensor, but not enough horizontal line pair resolution. So what they've done is added more glass, done better coatings, and built bigger lenses that are designed to fit over the larger lens openings on the iPhone. And by the way, it works on Android too now. And what they've done is address those issues with resolution by coming up with this new product. So now, if you've got the 48 megapixel sensor and that's getting good to you, but you want to switch, Jefferson, to your ultra wide or your telephoto, you're down to 12. You're down to 12. So if you want to stick with 48, then you can put a wide or a telephoto lens on that main camera and you still get to use your 48 millimeter, your 48 megapixel sensor. And now I have adjusted my advice on this to say, I think that's a good idea.
Okay. What focal lengths are we talking about with the new Moment lenses?
Okay, so we have an 18 millimeter, which is a nice super wide lens. We have a 58 millimeter, which is their telephoto. And we have a 10X macro. We have a 1.33 and 1.55 anamorphic wide lens. And we have I believe it's a 10 or 14 millimeter fisheye.
So if I put the 55 millimeter on my 24 millimeter, 58 millimeter, that will get me to roughly 80 millimeter?
Yeah, it's better to, you know, it's better to think of it in 2x or 4x, I think. It's 2x on the main camera lens and it's 4x on the telephoto.
Okay,
So
so
you'll lose
two.
that resolution. You can go down to 12 megapixels and get 4x out of this lens, or you can take advantage of your main camera and get 2x.
So it sounds like if I put the 2X and I use the normal wide lens, I'm basically at a 50 millimeter portrait lens, right?
Right. And the other advantage, though, is that you have a lot better chance of getting a nice bokeh, a nice out of focus back. Solves the problem of everything being in focus all the time when you use a smartphone.
Okay. And of course, the proof is in the pudding. So we have not tried
It
these
is.
yet. Right.
Now, I will say this. I was very attuned to all of their lenses when the iPhone 7 came out. In fact, I used their lenses before then. And frankly, their first batch of lenses, hit or miss. They were pioneering new ground there. And you know, sometimes you're not going to get the right call when you're doing something nobody else has ever done. But they cleaned all that up. They came out with second versions of lenses, which were very good if you had an iPhone 7. And I did find them to be very high quality and much higher quality than most of the ones I tested. And they worked well. But as the phones kept maturing, these lenses I started noticing were there was starting to be more chromatic aberration. And this was just basically because the lenses could not resolve enough data. They weren't high enough resolution for the newer sensors and the newer computational photography tricks that iPhone was using. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume everything works as they say it does, but I am also going to test it. Trust but verify, I believe is the saying. So I do have some lenses coming and I'm going to test them and I'll do my full unbiased report. I'm not sponsored by them. They don't sponsor this show. We don't have an affiliate link. So you know, everyone else is going to tell you what they tell you. Maybe has some other thing in mind, you could think that, but not us. We don't have anything to gain here. So we're just going to say what we think. If we like them, we'll tell you, and if we don't, we won't.
Actually, we do have something to gain. Better pictures, right?
There you go. Well, and see, this is the thing. I really appreciate the mission of Moment because what they did was they saw the ability long before anybody else, long before anybody else, to start this trend of mobile filmmaking, and they wanted to give creators tools that could get them the results they were used to with the quote unquote real camera. That was a pretty big visionary step, Jefferson, 10 years ago, because that's when they started this, 10 years ago.
Okay, 10 years ago, and you know the guy who runs Moment, who started Moment, Mark, he was competing with GoPro. He had one of the first action cameras, Contour. So that's 15 years ago, and he did not win that battle. But I'm thrilled that he's made a business at a Moment.
Yeah, and if you want to use an action camera, I'd recommend using their macro lens, excuse me, their fisheye lens to get that same kind of GoPro look that you get on your iPhone. I think that'll be cool. I've looked at the detailed specs that they sent me. Everything is made of metal. They're using extra coatings. They again, this the other thing is if you tried using pick any brand, not just Moment, any lens on an iPhone 11, 12 that you bought when you had an iPhone 7 or 8, you probably noticed that you had some serious vignetting because the lenses didn't even cover the camera. They weren't as wide as the cameras because Apple started making these cameras so that if you look at just look at the bump between the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 13, you'll see that there's a much larger camera array. So the lenses weren't even big enough to cover the Atom lenses weren't even big enough to cover the ones that are on the iPhone. So that alone is going to cause this to be a better deal in terms of image quality. Now, there's one other thing I want to say that I think they're doing is really cool. They're actually allowing people to trade in their old Moment lenses. Now, I would have never expected that somebody who bought something when iPhone 7 was out there would think they had a right to get a trade-in on something that happens for iPhone 14 and 15. But they saw that and they have a good ethos there. And now I don't know how much they're going to give you. If it's not enough, you can sell it on eBay. But I think it's cool that they're trying to help people have an upgrade path. And for $5, your old Moment case can be switched to something that works. And they're broadening their audience because now they can sell to people that have Androids as well. And I know some people, Jeff, in our audience have both.
As do I. Yeah.
I was pointing to you, buddy.
Yeah. Speaking of cases, you've been a fan of B-Scrip and I'm a fan of Small Rig. Do we know if the Moment lenses will fit on those cages?
Okay, B-Scrip has a proprietary mount. Small Rig has some drop-in mounts of different kinds, so I think it might. But I actually have a newfound way of approaching this because of another Moment product that's not brand new. It's been out for at least a year, and that's their MagSafe cage. That's what I've been using the last 3 weeks. And I got to tell you, I really dig it because it's super fast to mount the phone. And, I guarantee you I can mount my phone in a MagSafe cage by Moment faster than any of those other cages. And I like them both. I own B-Scrip cages and I own Small Rig cases, but I've been using the Moment one because you just plop it on there. And it's on there. I shook the phone, Jefferson. I stood up on my bed and I shook the phone so that if it fell, it would land on my bed as hard as I could, and I couldn't get it off.
I don't know if I told this story, so slap me if I did, but when I was in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, and I was on a whitewater rafting trip, and I had the iPhone in a selfie stick with the Manfrotto mount to connect it, and we were going so fast, it fell right out of the selfie stick into the water, and I lost that iPhone. And at the same time, I also had the Smart Rig cage, and that thing wasn't going anywhere. So I'm like swearing cage.
I knew I could count on you for an extreme example, but if I'm going to go on a whitewater rafting trip, then yeah, I'm not going to use the MagSafe cage. No way. But yeah, I don't believe that unless I haven't checked with B-Scrip. They haven't been communicating with me lately. I don't know if they have a drop-in plate that would allow these lenses to work on their cage. I think their cages are great, and I think Small Rigs are great as well. Small Rigs probably offers the most protection, but it's a lot less convenient.
Yeah, well, on the lenses, I particularly like the idea of some bokeh for my 50 millimeter. I don't know how I feel about having extra lenses in my pocket. The beauty of the iPhone is it's the camera in your pocket, and we'll have to see on that one. Yeah,
it just depends on what your use case is, Jefferson. Like me, I'm mostly in a studio, so I don't care. I can throw a lens on. I'm in the studio. I'm working on a set that's on a table. But I probably would look at this as, for something for people that are wanting to go out and do like a serious portrait session with somebody. You know, they're gonna go ahead and bring a lens if it's important. And if you're doing a lot of macro work inside, it doesn't become an issue. But I do agree with you. I mean, we both have had this feeling of the beauty of the iPhone in your pocket having three lenses. You don't really need anything else. You don't even need a case, really. If you're just in a situation where you got to go, you got something to work with. And I still think that's going to hold true. But in situations where there's a use case where it's appropriate, these lenses aren't expensive. They're like $120. Having one around if you need it, I think, makes some kind of sense. But we'll see. I may test them and hate them. We'll find out.
All right. Well, in other news, I just put up a new video on the iPhone photo team about how to do time lapses. And it's a quick little 1 minute video. Everything you need to know. The good thing about the iPhone is it's so easy. All you have to do is put the camera into a tripod, swipe left, turn on time lapse and let her rip. You're not given choices for speeds. You're given one speed. Your only choice is lenses, wide, medium, or telephoto. And we're going to do some more of these little quick hit videos. Scott knows I'm a time lapse freak. When you look at doing time lapses, because you make them too, any tips you'd like to offer our listeners?
Well, excuse me. First of all, I'd say I'm into time lapse because of you. You you know, you have two or three phones going all the time with a time lapse. And the stuff I've seen you produce, Jeff, is nothing short of extraordinary, in my opinion. So you have motivated me to do more time lapses. I do use the Apple app when I know that I just want it to come out because it's going to get it right. But if I'm trying to be more creative, if I'm working on something like a slider with a motorized head, there are third-party apps that will let you have control, Filmic Pro being one, where you can pick how often that time lapse is going to fire off and over what duration. And I like having that kind of capability. You don't have that with the iPhone's native app. I don't know why they can't fix that since all these third-party apps have it. It would make it so much easier. But my tip is if you just need it to come out and you don't want to futz with it, use the iPhone app. If you want to do something really creative, you know, get something like Filmic Pro where you can control the duration and the frequency of the exposure.
Right, because on our big cameras, we get to choose, like take a frame every second, every 5 seconds, every 10 seconds. And that's why some of them look so great. The downside is that you then have 1,000 photos that you have to process and you have to put into Lightroom and you have to adjust the exposure. And then you have to then throw it into Final Cut or Premiere or whatever. Whereas on the iPhone, just click a button and it's done and it's processed for you instantly. And that's amazing.
I agree, except with again, I'll just use Filmic Pro as an example. They do that for you if you select their time-lapse tool, and you can select duration and frequency, and it still gets assembled for you. But you're right, the old-school method of having to dump it all in and take care of it in post is a bit more time-consuming and does require a little bit more skill.
Yeah, the Galaxy that I bought, the S23 Plus, they let you choose variable speeds. And that worked pretty well for shooting night skies. I got some nice star trails that I could not get on the iPhone on a video. Though if you use the even longer app, you're able to do star trails. So, just say that.
Well, I don't understand if Android can do it, why Apple can't do it.
They probably figure nobody cares. Right?
You're right.
Yeah. Let's talk about hot phones. There are a lot of stories this, you know, we've had a record heat this summer and a lot of people have been having trouble with their phones. I had trouble in Moab when I was in Moab, Utah, and it was 100 degrees and I got a big error message saying, your phone is too hot. Let it rest for a while. Have you had that experience up in Seattle?
No, believe it or not, Seattle has had the best weather in the United States for the whole summer. It's been incredible. I mean, this week is the first time we've had some heat. We've been at 75 and sunny for months. But I do know that problem. But it's not a problem that's limited to iPhones. I mean, if you have any of the higher-end mirrorless cameras or DSLRs that shoot video, you've probably seen a heat warning, and that would even be on a cold day because those sensors overheat. And there are specs published with every camera and camera phone that tell you what the operating environment needs to be, and people frequently ignore those specs. But the engineers, they don't. They know what the thing's supposed to do, and they don't want you to try to put your phone on a tripod in Death Valley when it's 125 to do a four-hour time lapse.
Yeah, or to use it at 100-degree weather in Moab to operate your drone, because that didn't work so well for me. One thing I read about solutions is fast chargers are not good in hot situations. That's one. And then the second is that when you have your case on, that makes the phone hotter. So if you're in a really hot area, take the case off. Have you heard any of those, Scott?
That's incredibly good advice. And as a guy who drives a Tesla, I can tell you that I know about the heat and battery thing. You're right. On a hot day, you don't want to go to a supercharger. You want to use a slow trickle charge, and then your battery will perform much better. Also, you want to make sure that you're preconditioning your battery. Apple's phones all now come with the ability to do charging in such a way that maximizes the battery's life and performance. Some people turn that off because they don't want to be bothered with it. But if you know you're going to be out doing serious photography or video in extreme weather, I think it makes total sense to enable in your settings Apple's battery management, and that will give you the best chance at having the experience you're hoping for.
Do you believe that leaving it plugged in for most of the day and things like that actually hurt the battery?
If you're not using the battery management system that Apple's has provided, I do.
Okay. Let's talk about the iPhone photo team. You've been writing up a storm. You've got some new pieces out lately. What are you working on? Tell folks what you've posted this week since we last spoke to them.
Well, I tell you what I'm working on because that's mostly on the top of my mind. I have got two pieces I'm working on. One is just kind of a short and sweet how to shoot video on the iPhone and best practices. It's not going to be a detailed article. It's just some, hey, here's four or five things you need to know. And the other one I'm doing is more of an in-depth look at these cameras because I did a little test, Jefferson, and I was surprised. We all know that since the iPhone 11, the era of three camera lenses on an iPhone has been possible. But I checked with several people and just said, do you know which of these lenses is which? And like 70% did not.
Right. Now, are you saying,
no idea which,
you're
which,
saying you're which, saying by pointing to the three on the back of your camera, which one is what?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, which one of these three lenses is the ultra wide? Can you tell me? They had no idea.
And I have no idea. So tell us.
I'm going to write it. I'm going to write an article that details how you can tell and what everything does. How's that?
Okay. And if you'd like to read it, go to the iPhonePhotoTeam.com. Please be a member. Please join us. It's all free and you get lots of iPhone tips and advice and great articles from Scott.
And Jefferson.
And me too. A community that is showing off some absolutely amazing work.
Yes. We have some wonderful photographers who are able to prove that the best camera is the one you have with you. And we see their pictures on a regular basis. I'm also posting pictures of my Hot Wheels cars, Jefferson. And I got a compliment yesterday from one of their readers said, I thought that was a real car. And then, nope, it's the size of my thumb. It's pretty amazing.
So take us into one of those sessions. So you're shooting a Hot Wheels, and you've got a little setup, and what kind of lighting, where do you put the camera and all that sort of good stuff?
Yeah, I like to work with dioramas or simple paper backgrounds that establish a scene, a setting, looks like a gas station or a racetrack. I found this guy in China who made me these incredible, they're really mouse pads. They're extra large mouse pads, but they have all the lines on them like they were racetracks. So I use those a lot. And what I try to do is I work in a shooting tent. I work in a shooting tent that I actually got at B&H, and I want to control the light. And, you know, we're working with an item that's the size of my thumb, so it's really hard to control specularity and stuff, have it not blow out the whole image. So I try to get the room dark. And then I use a box, believe it or not. You know, when you go to Costco, the guy says, would you like a box for your food? You say, yes. Well, one day a guy gave me a box, and I thought, man, that would just be perfect to sit inside the shooting tent to give me even more control of the light. So I put everything down inside that. And then I have a million different lights. But one of my favorites, because it's so easy to control, is the Profoto C+ we've talked about. Unfortunately, I don't make that anymore. I use that a lot. And I also will put a scrim underneath that so that it just kind of controls the angle of light. Sometimes I'll bounce light off the silver fabric in the overall shooting tent that I'm working on. But generally, I'm trying to reduce light because all of these metal cards have problems with specular highlights. So I'm generally shooting into a bounce card and trying to flag off some light. And then the great thing about the iPhone is I can put that sucker right in there and get very close and change the perspective and do stuff that makes you think that, you know, it's a big car. And perspective is the real story. If, you know, trying to figure out how to make things of different sizes all match up, and that has to do with subject to camera distance and then subject to background distance and all kind of stuff. Playing with all that's just kind of fun mental gymnastics for me. And so I do it. And I buy these little 1/64 scale people and I put them in the scenes. And I know it seems kind of crazy, but it makes me happy. And I will say that the iPhone is the perfect tool for this because there are times when I've got to get the phone in a very small spot And it simply wouldn't even work to get a mirrorless camera in there. And the images, for the most part, are going to be seen on social media. So it doesn't really matter even if I just use my 12 megapixel camera. It's still enough data to do what I want to do. And it's just fun.
How long do you spend on these shoots?
Oh, 40, 50 minutes a day. Probably spend about 10 to 15 minutes sometimes setting up the diorama and getting everything just right. I go to places like Hobby Stop and get fake trees and bushes, and they're all 1/64 scale. I buy a lot of stuff from model train guys because they do this on a scale that's really phenomenal. They'll build their whole basement out like a little town. I build little, 2 feet by 3 feet sections, and then I go ahead and shoot some cars in them. And I have about, right now I have about 5,500 cars to choose from.
Okay. And when you're doing this shoot for 45 minutes, how many frames will you take until you get it right?
Well, I don't make a lot of exposures, Jefferson. I've started kind of knowing how to get what I want about halfway into my photographic career. So I might take 8 or 10 exposures. That's it. I'm just generally doing it from the standpoint of coverage because I'm trying to do these Instagram reels so that you have multiple looks at the same subject. And I don't know how I'm doing at it, but I'm trying it. So I'd say 8 to 10 images is pretty much a typical session. Sometimes 12 to 14 if I have challenging lighting. It's not a lot of exposures. It's more a lot of moving the phone around and then seeing if that's the look I want. And the great thing, of course, of using an iPhone is it's a what you see is what you get kind of environment. Right. So you can tell right away if you got the shot.
All righty. So a big question came to my mind that I think would be a great topic for us to weigh in on next week. And so I want to throw it out, give you time to think about it, and really open it up to listeners as well to contact us. Basically, Tim Cook will not pay any attention to this, but it's fun exercise. What new features do we want to see in the next iPhone? Okay? If we could have the perfect iPhone, let's do that. And how should people get in touch with us? Should we put a topic up on the iPhone photo team and let people weigh in there?
You can do that, yeah. Just go ahead right through the chat. It's the whole thing is sort of the Wild West. We'll see what you put up there. So will everybody else. So put your comments up there, or you can always just reach us via email. I'm at scott@scottborn.com is my main email address. And Jefferson, how about you?
I'm Jefferson Graham at Gmail. But I want to encourage everyone to check us out at the iPhone Photo Team. I do have a website, jeffersongraham.net, and PhotoWalks TV is going to be in Jackson Hole this weekend. So I hope you'll check that out. And you can see Scott's toy photography where?
On Instagram, HotWheelsFan1, HotWheelsFanone.
All right. We'll be back next week with what new features we want to see in the new iPhone. Scott, have a great week.
You too, Jeff. See everybody later.